Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Inmate Beard and Religious Exercise Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 20th, 2015, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Holt v. Hobbs, which concerns whether the Arkansas Department of Corrections grooming policy, which generally prohibits inmates from growing beards save for a narrow health-based exception, violates the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act by impermissibly burdening the religious liberty of a Muslim inmate seeking to grow a half-inch beard for religious reasons. In an opinion delivered by Justice Alito, the court unanimously held that the Arkansas prison's grooming policy, as applied in this case, violated the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act because it substantially burdened the prisoner's religious exercise and was not narrowly tailored to achieve the government's security needs. Justice Ginsburg filed a concurring opinion, which Justice Sotomayor joined. Justice Sotomayor also filed a concurring opinion. The judgment of the Eighth Circuit was reversed, and the case remanded for further proceedings. To discuss the case, we have Jordan Lawrence, who is Senior Counsel and Senior Vice President of the Office of Strategic Initiatives for the Alliance Defending Freedom. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Lawrence.
The Supreme Court on January 20th, 2015, handed down an important religious liberty case called Holt v. Hobbs. And this case involved an Arkansas prisoner who had converted to Islam, who desired to grow a beard as some portions of Islamic religion require. And the Arkansas prison official said no because of a policy that said no beards. But, interestingly enough, they allowed people, men with a medical condition, to grow quarter-inch beards. It's a skin condition in which their hairs become ingrown if they are shaved closely, and the only way to keep their pores from being infected by the skin condition is to allow them to grow quarter-inch beards. And so this Muslim prisoner said, I want that same ability, and they said, no, you don't have the skin condition, so you are under the no beard policy. So what he did then was, is he brought a lawsuit under the federal law, acronym known as RLUIPA, which is kind of a cute-sounding name, like Fruit Loops or something, Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act. And what it does is says that if there's a rule that a person has an objection to based on their religion, it's a four-part test. There has to be a religious belief that's sincere, and then the person has to show that it's being burdened by the government's actions, that there's some penalty or whatever if they don't obey this rule that violates their beliefs. And then the government must show that it has a compelling state interest done by a least restrictive means. And what the Supreme Court ruled on January 20th in a unanimous decision written by Justice Sam Alito was that the prison officials had to grant the exemption. And basically because if they're going to allow beards for medical conditions, they also have to allow beards for the religious reasons. So this case was handled by Professor Doug Laycock of the University of Virginia Law School, who has argued, I think, about four or five cases at the Supreme Court and just did an excellent job. He's a brilliant scholar, great guy, and he was also helped by the Beckett Fund, which has won several religious liberty cases at the Supreme Court in the last few years, including the Hosanna Tabor case involving church autonomy back in 2012. And along with the group that I work for, Alliance Defending Freedom, we won the Hobby Lobby Conestoga cases last spring on the religious exemption under the HHS mandate requirement that private businesses pay for abortifacient type pills and devices for their employees. There were two cases there. Beckett handled one, Hobby Lobby. ADF handled the other one, Conestoga of the wood specialties from Lancaster. So anyway, these cases, if you contrast the Hobby Lobby Conestoga case with Obamacare objection to abortifacients compared to this one, this is about a prisoner growing a beard. So this shows that religious liberty cases come in all shapes and sizes. I mean, I've known of cases where girls have objected to gym class outfits that they weren't modest. There have been cases involving Amish people who object to putting those fluorescent orange triangles on the back of their slow-moving horse buggies and things like that. So those are the kind of cases that you see. Religious liberty cases come in all shapes and sizes. Now, what is important to point out in this case is that although there is clearly a governmental interest in maintaining prison security, the way these cases are decided is not in that generalized way. You don't say, well, the government wants to keep prisons safe, and therefore any rule we promulgate by invoking prison security gets approved, and the religious adherent must lose. This case shows that the specific rule at issue is the one that the government must justify. So they have to show that allowing quarter-inch beards for religious reasons will compromise prison security. And under this four-part RLUIPA test, they weren't able to do this. So the government, the state of Arkansas basically asserted two interests as to why it needed to have this no beard policy. One of the reasons was that long hair, long beards can be used by prisoners to smuggle contraband. They can smuggle drugs, weapons, SIM cards, all sorts of other things like this. But Justice Alito basically refuted this, and I remember at the oral arguments he said, a quarter-inch beard is not very long, and it's pretty hard to hide stuff in it. It's pretty hard to hide in a quarter-inch beard a SIM card or a revolver, and obviously, you know, getting some chuckles from the audience. The other reason why Arkansas said that it needed this policy was for identification purposes. And what their concern, their security concern was that prisoners would grow a beard, then escape from prison, and then shave to alter their appearance. And if people remember Harrison Ford back in the movie The Fugitive in the early 90s, that's exactly what he did. So he was, you know, falsely convicted of murdering his wife. He's on that bus and falls, there's the accident, and he escapes, and then he goes to the hospital and he shaves his beard to alter his appearance. So see, you know, Harrison Ford did it, so Arkansas must be right. But what Justice Alito said is that they could take, prison officials could take two pictures of a prisoner, one when the prisoner is clean shaven, one when he has a beard. And then if the prisoner escapes, they could send both those pictures out. So whether the prisoner had a beard or had shaved his beard, they would have photos of that prisoner and could identify them. So the Supreme Court was unimpressed with that governmental interest as specifically applied here, that it really didn't, the no beard policy really did not put forward and advance the purpose that Arkansas wanted for having clear identification of prisoners. This case also dealt with the issue that you can't defeat somebody's religious liberty claim for an exemption by saying, oh, not everybody in the Islamic faith or whatever religion it is that's being put forward in a case, that not everybody agrees with you on that. The religious beliefs go to the adherent. So you can't defeat it by bringing in some authority figure in the religion and say, well, not everybody believes you have to wear a beard, you're interpreting the religion wrong. That puts the government in the position of sort of second-guessing the theological understanding that an individual has. And the First Amendment, RLUIPA, laws like that protect an individual's right to religious freedom. One of the other important aspects of this case was that the Supreme Court took into consideration the fact that other state prison systems allow prisoners to grow beards. Now, the court was careful, and I think rightly so. That doesn't mean that a state that holds to a minority position on a security issue, that their policy is not shared by a lot of other state prison systems. It doesn't mean that that state with a minority position will always lose. But it does mean, the court said, and I think this is a wise statement from the court, that when so many prisons offer an accommodation, a prison must add at least persuasive reasons why it believes that it must take a different course. And they just can't say, well, you know, we know better than all the other states, you know, no beard, something like that. There was also something interesting in this case of the, like the Sherlock Holmes story, the dog that did not bark. Justice Ginsburg had a
concurring opinion,
and the dog that's not barking is that most of the justices did not join. It was only joined by Justice Sotomayor. And in her opinion, Justice Ginsburg tries to get one last swipe in to vindicate her dissent in the Hobby Lobby case. And that is what she was arguing about, was that when third parties are affected by somebody's religious liberty claim, Justice Ginsburg said that they should lose. So the fact that women who worked for Hobby Lobby would not be able to get these abortifacient drugs or devices, that the Hobby Lobby's religious claim should lose. And so she brings this up that basically says, well, look, the prisoner growing a beard doesn't really affect anybody else, so that's why he should win. But the court, I think that whether third parties are affected by someone's assertion of a religious belief and the government giving them exemption, it's a relevant consideration when it comes to the compelling state interest. Is it done in the least restrictive means, on how third parties are affected? But what Justice Ginsburg is saying is that it's an absolute trump card. The religious person always loses if third parties are affected. And that can't be the rule, because sometimes the effect on third parties is pretty minor, and that in a civil society, sometimes people have to adjust to accommodate other people's rights. And I think that happens frequently and is no big deal. Now, for all of you, this is sort of a bonus feature that I will add to this, is what are the upcoming religious liberty cases we have at the Supreme Court. On January 12th, we had the Gilbert, Arizona sign case, Reed versus Town of Gilbert, where they were treating signs, temporary signs put in the median, differently. If they were political signs, they could be out there basically for 5 months, could be 32 square feet. But if it was a church directional sign, it could only be 6 square feet and out for 12 hours. I think that case was argued very ably by my boss, David Cortman, at Alliance Defending Freedom. I think the Supreme Court is going to strike down that ordinance. And then also upcoming on February 20th, the Supreme Court will be considering for review a very big religious liberty case. And the fact that I'm the attorney for it, I think, still means it's a big case, and I'm not exaggerating. And that's Bronx Household of Faith versus the Board of Education of the City of New York. New York City, unlike every major school district in the country, prohibits religious worship services in its empty buildings during non-school hours on weeknights and
weekends.
So any community group can meet in New York City public schools for any purpose the policy says pertaining to the welfare of the community, unquote, but not religious worship services. And there has been an injunction in effect against this policy since August of 2002. But the Second Circuit Federal Appeals Court, by a 2-1 vote last April, said the policy was okay under the Constitution. There's a stay in effect, so churches and other religious groups are still meeting in New York City schools. But the Second Circuit really got it wrong, in my opinion, distorting Supreme Court free speech doctrine on equal access, free exercise doctrine. Here, I mean, they're singling out religious worship and saying, no, it can be excluded from a form generally open to everybody else by calling it a religious subsidy. And it's this government aid to religion, which to me is just a ridiculous argument. So we'll see if the Supreme Court will take that case. And that would be a very big religious liberty case to come down. I think that these kinds of cases illustrate, as states are ruling and voting on whether to put statutory state religious liberty protections into case, that religious liberty extends to a very broad and varied list of issues. It's not just limited to people objecting to certain things here or there, something like that. And that in a free society, we should, as much as possible, protect people's right of conscience to live their lives according to their religious beliefs.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.